www.spiritfamonline.com to all parts of Africa, Europe, Asia, Antarctica, Middle East, and the Americas. Spirit FM, positive soul music.
You're listening to the new Spirit FM, Christian hit music.
I hear the sound of a mighty rush.
Welcome to Issues of Life on Spirit 88.3 FM. 60 minutes of news, prophecies, music, and the Word every Saturday from 8 to 9 p.m. Get revived, inspired, motivated, and warned about the times we are living in. Prophecies of old are unfolding right before our eyes every day. Verses in the Bible are today's headline news. Don't be ignorant, but be an informed believer. Join Brother Eben for the next 60 minutes and be blessed. Get this edition and others from spiritissues.info.
We'll be going home. I hear the sound.
Welcome to Issues of Life on Spirit 88.3 FM. 60 minutes of news, prophecies, music, and the Word every Saturday from 8 to 9 p.m. Get revived, inspired, motivated, and warned about the times we are living in. Prophecies of old are unfolding right before our eyes every day. Verses in the Bible are today's headline news. Don't be ignorant, but be an informed believer. Join Brother Eben for the next 60 minutes and be blessed. Get this edition and others from spiritissues.info.
We'll be good.
Good evening to our listeners. Greetings from Kumasi, and this is Spirit 88.3 FM. It's always a privilege to come your way, and indeed, we are interested in very interesting times this evening. I'm going to talk about the Israel-Iran war, the other dimensions of it, which is not often talked about. And, I mean, the spiritual aspect of it, we are going to look a bit into it this evening. It's not something I can finish this evening because it's quite, it's a lot if you are really going deep. But let's see how far we can go. Indeed, these are the times that every believer should understand what the Bible says about the times we are in, and just be a serious Christian. That's the most important thing. I mean, that's the key aspect of being a Christian when it matters most. So these are the times to be a serious Christian, and the one that knows God for him or herself. Oftentimes, people just play church, but knowing God for yourself is a critical aspect of our faith. So these are the times to really do so. This week, one teacher sent me a message with joy and excitement and gladness. And I was also it was interesting to watch the Minister of Education address the issue that the president has given the go-ahead through the GES, that students can be sacked, students who misbehave in schools, who violate or going against the rules can be sacked. And I believe it's a very good move now, because I know for those who have listened to this program for the last 2 to 3 months, we've talked a lot about the school issues and all that. So it's something really, really, really that, I mean, people were becoming worried and, you know, confused, because just to see, you know, 13, 14, 15, 16, up to 18, roughly, I mean, students' age, I mean, students who are uncontrollable, untouchable, and I mean, can just do anything and everything. I at least something is going to be done, and it's good the minister is going that way. I mean, it's a good initiative indeed. But this week they finished the BEC. Last week I spoke a bit about it, and you know, I saw a video, extremely worrying video. This girl, perhaps some of you might have seen it, this girl who was asked after the final paper how the exam went, and it's like, oh yes, and then invigilators were also teaching us, and I said, this issue, you know, I was discussing with a friend, a teacher, and they were saying that, you see, the exam or practice issue has gotten to the point where it's so normal that she doesn't even see it as bad to even talk about it through a mic whilst the camera is on her. And it's like, this is how low we are going with our educational system. And it wasn't surprising that Legon, University of Ghana, Legon, this week, let me look for that headline, and it says that UG, University of Ghana, suspends 14 students over misconduct and 97 sanctioned for exam or practices. It's quite disturbing. I mean, the numbers are quite disturbing. And, you know, if you are to really probe and ask these people, when this exam, the appetite, the quest to cheat in exam started, if they are to be sincere, most will tell you that it started while they were in the earlier years. You see, so this apple thing, parents buying apple and chairs, school heads and teachers compromising regulators and all these things happening. It looks like, oh, it's just some BC, there is nothing, it's nothing. But it's a foundation upon which this bad habit or bad moral issue is built on. They will progress from BEC when they get to senior, secondary, senior high. That same means and ways and means and all that will need to be factored in to try and survive. And it's happening. We know what is happening. The schools, I mean, compromising regulators, buying questions and all this, apple leaking. You see, so they will go through this. Now, when they get to tertiary, because of the change, you know, tertiary university exams is not the same as the WAEC run exams, so the way it's you are having your way in BEC and WASI, you are not going to have it the way in the university in most cases. So the Legon news, I think, is a warning to parents and teachers and all that who think it's okay to help these children be morally bankrupt through exam systems. Eventually you pay a higher price at a place where it becomes far more difficult and a bit more, the embarrassment is that serious that now your names have been listed. Can you imagine names listed in national news networks and on the internet, your name, these names are going to stay there? Oh, it's sad though. One day when you are even old and your name is searched, and one of the items that will come I thought your name was you engage in exam or practice, you know, it's bad. So parents should be okay. So right, let's get into some of the key issues we are dealing with this evening, the news. So we have the war going on, but first, before I get there, Western media silent as slaughter of Christians intensifies in Nigeria. And this week, the Benue State, 200 Christians, were butchered, killed in their sleep. It's terrible. What is happening in Nigeria is extremely alarming. According to some statistics, so far this year, we are just in June, and already 3,100 Christians in Nigeria have been killed. And that's alarming. I saw a video online this week or last week, a former soldier in the Nigerian military who was sentenced to 10 years imprisonment, and his offense was to complain that the armor that they have is not sophisticated enough to match that of the rebels, like the Boko Haram and all. So he was jailed for that, for questioning or requesting for better armor to be able to defend themselves. And when I watched his interview and how he narrated how his friends, many were killed when they go to meet these people, and you realize Nigeria is in serious trouble, because it looks like the government is not interested in really, really defending the people. It's not. And I was shocked when I saw under headline where a governor was saying that he doesn't believe in self-defense. So, I mean, just the people, they should just kill and go. I mean, they should just come and kill. And I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But, wow, Nigeria. Okay, so we have this headline. Three churches bombed in Sudan's North Darfur state in RSF attacks. So three churches have been bombed in the El Fasher, the capital of Sudan's North Darfur state, during two separate attacks by the Rapid Support Forces. The targeted churches included the Sudanese Episcopal Church, the African Inland Church, and the Roman Catholic Church. You know, I mean, the instability in Sudan has also created a serious issue for Christians there. So the persecution is up the roof. This headline says, man who murdered beloved Pastor Bell had other pastors on the kill list. So the man accused of killing a longtime Arizona pastor told police he had planned to murder other pastors and priests across several states. This is in America, and you know, the hatred for. I saw one man who was saying that, you know, he's into demonology stuff and all that, exorcism and all, and he was saying post-COVID there's an intensity of demonic activity in the world, and for that I agree. I mean, people are just demonized. A lot of people are just demonized. If you look at some of the things happening, behaviors in the news, people's activities in the news, you look at some of the things, clearly it takes demon-possessed people to be doing such things. So it's not surprising some of the things we are hearing in recent times. The numbers, it's just something. Then Britain legalizes abortion up to the moment of birth. So you can abort a baby that is full term, 9 months. I mean, you can actually kill that baby. This is how evil the world is becoming. And Russia warns Trump against bombing Iran, and Ayatollah vows to never surrender. So Russia's deputy foreign minister Sergei Ryabkov stated on Wednesday that direct military assistance from the United States to Israel could significantly destabilize the situation in the Middle East. Ryabkov emphasized that Russia advises the United States against providing such support to Israel, particularly as the ministry has warned that Israeli strikes on nuclear facilities have brought the region perilously close to catastrophe. These comments were made in conjunction with a stark warning issued by Ayatollah Khamenei of Iran, who cautioned that any U.S. military intervention would likely result in irreparable harm. Then this headline says, Trump warns America could get involved directly in Israel-Iran conflict if things continue to escalate. Then this one too says, Iran threatens U.S. involvement will lead to all-out war, as Tehran reportedly prepping to strike American military bases. This one too. Trump gives Israel and Iran 2-week deadline to broker peace. And then this one, Iran's Revolutionary Guard and the rising. Okay, no, I'll get to that one as the last item to deal with. You know, experts and CIA, former CIA, they've spoken for years that they know that there are Iranian sleeper cells embedded within the U.S. And so when Iran gives some of these warnings, you know, I mean, they know what they are talking about. So, you know, sleeper cells means these are trained terrorists or who, I mean, various ways. They are there. They are in the U.S. living normal lives, as it were, as innocent people, innocent looking people. But when the appointed time comes that they should be activated, they take up their role, their actual role, why they are in the country. And, you know, I remember watching some of the interviews on, I mean, U.S. Senate, when they interviewed regarding the southern border, how porous it was. And they know that a lot of terrorists have walked through, I mean, unhindered into the U.S. So they don't even know where these people are. So they are, your back southern border was so open, anybody could walk in through freely and all that. So these people have freely come into the country and they are there. And as to what they have as sleeper cells, as terrorists who are lying low, their capabilities, you don't know. US too is a place where guns are easily acquired, easily available. And, you know, so some are really worried in the US. If you listen to some of those who are anti-war, one of their worries is the fact that it's not as simple as just US aiding Israel to go and bomb the underground nuclear facility in Iran, in Fado, as they call it. But the effect, what happens to US as well? Because yes, you have the upper hand in that issue of B-2 bombers and the, you know, bunker busters, you know, you bomb, yes. But then what can they also do to you? That's also the bigger issue. So, well, these are some of the things that is plaguing the minds of people. People are worried as to the consequence, because it becomes, when Iran is threatening the all-out war and all, that's one of the possibilities which people fear is the Strait of Hormuz. If you look at the world map or the Middle East map in this case, you know, that shipping line is a major shipping line in the Middle East where a lot of the crude ships, you know, pass. If Iran decides to block it with their, you know, they have undersea bombs and all that which they can use to block. So that means no fuel tankers can move and all, it can block that whole. And they've threatened before, actually, that it's one of the things they may do. If they do so, the consequence is obvious. Crude prices can skyrocket to levels we've not seen in recent times, you know. And crude is something which the ripple effect runs through the whole world. I mean, if crude is now over $70 thereabout, but if they really do that, I mean, rest assured, it can cross way beyond $120 upwards. And, you know, the effects, you can imagine the effects over here. You know, a gallon, a liter now is around 12 cedis thereabout. If, I mean, Iran is to go ahead and the Middle East is really on fire, this 11 cedi can jump to 18, 19, or these are all possibilities. So this war has consequences which is not just like, some people are just fighting, like two boys are fighting type of thing. Oh, so it's my back is. No, this one, it has real implications for the world economy. Major shockwaves. It will be far devastating than COVID and Ukraine war excuses that some people were giving us. You know, it's a far, far, far bigger issue, because that one, it really, the ripple effect will just cascade into every facet of the world economy. So it's quite serious. And, well, I mean, you can only look on and pray that the worst does not happen. That's the only thing we can do. There's nothing else. The only thing we can do is just pray that the worst doesn't happen. And I believe it's important we look at that as Christians and pray for the peace of Jerusalem. I mean, we are instructed to also pray. It's all part of our assignment as Christians as well. And yeah, so that's it. But this evening I'm going to talk about, you know, the issue of Iran and Russia, sorry, Iran and Israel, this war, which, you know, they've been enemies for, you know, a long time. You know, this revolution from the 79, I believe, till now, it's they've been enemies. And but what is the real motive behind this Iranian activity, their hatred for Israel and Israel's resistance and their attacks and all? It's not as simple as it looks on the surface, like geopolitics. No, it's more spiritually undertoned than the geopolitics that we see on the surface in the news. And tonight I don't think I can finish, but let me start it where we look a bit into the spiritual dimensions of it from the Iranian side, so that people can get a better picture of why Israel does some of the things they do. All right, so this title says, I mean, Iran's Revolutionary Guard and the Rising Cult of Mahdism. Mahdi, I'm going to explain a bit better. Mahdism, Mahdism. I think I've spoken a bit about it, the Mahdi and all that some time back on this program last year. I spoke a bit about it as well in previous years. And so, what is Mahdism? As Shia Islam force, like, you know, first we have two major groups, the Shias and the Sunnis. The Iran, the Yemen group, they are the Shias, they are the minority. The larger Sunni is the majority, I mean, Islam, like majority. So the Shias are the minority. But Iran and Yemen and those people, they are the Shia minority. So as a Shia Islamic force, the IR, or the Iranian Revolutionary Guards Command, IRGC's worldview hinges on Mahdism, the return of the 12 divinely ordained imam. So you can also call it the 12 imam, the Mahdi, the 12 imam. Muhammad al-Mahdi, or the hidden imam, or the 12 imam. These are all names that can be used synonymously. Whom Shia Muslims believe is withdrawn into a miraculous state of occultation, that's hiddenness, by God in AD 874. So the year 874. The concept of Mahdism is rooted in the belief that Imam Mahdi will one day return to rid the world of evil and injustice. His coming will bring about one final apocalyptic battle between two armies, in which Shias believe that Mahdi and his forces will prevail over evil. And then, you know, this current Islamic leader, like Iranian leader, preparations for the return of Mahdi became more serious after Ayatollah Khamenei assumed mantle of supreme leader in 1989. This appetite was initially shaped by the influence of Ayatollah Muhammad, the previous earlier ones, a hardline Islamic cleric who was one of the main proponents and theorists of the Khomeini's reinterpretation of Mahdism. This influence began to manifest itself in the late 1990s, where Khomeini developed a doctrine around Mahdism. To prepare for the 12 imams' return, the Ayatollah claimed it was necessary to create an ideal Islamic society based on Mahdism. Khomeini further developed this thesis a few years later to lay the ground for the 12 imams' return. The supreme leader outlined five necessary revolutionary steps or stages: an Islamic revolution, an Islamic regime, an Islamic government, an Islamic society, and an Islamic civilization. According to Khomeini and his allies, Iran had only achieved the first two stages and was stuck in completing an Islamic government. So the election of hardliner Ahmadinejad, for those who remember, around 2005 upwards, yeah, he served for two terms, I think. So the election of hardliner Ahmadinejad as president in 2005 turbocharged Mahdism across the Islamic Republic. Ahmadinejad, the member of the Basij, was obsessed with the doctrine of Mahdism and finding ways to speed up the return of the 12 Imam. This is perhaps unsurprising, given the fact that his spiritual leader was none other than Mesbah Yazdi. As the new president declared, "We have a mission to turn Iran into the country of the hidden Imam." Then let me take you back to this news report in September 26, 2012. So this is 13 years ago. Ahmadinejad was a president, and this is one news item reported speech of some things he said. The headline says, "Ahmadinejad says Imam Mahdi will be the ultimate savior." Iran's president Ahmadinejad indicated that he felt the arrival of Imam al-Mahdi could come quickly. So he goes on to say, Iran's president wrapped up his annual address to the United Nations General Assembly on a theological note, hailing the imminent arrival of the ultimate savior. "God Almighty has promised us a man of kindness." And then he goes on to say that the Iranian leader told world leaders and senior officials gathered in the New York, at what was expected to be his last speech to the assembly as president of Iran. Ahmadinejad said the savior is a man who loves people and loves absolute justice, a man who is a perfect human being, and is named Imam al-Mahdi, a man who will come in the company of Jesus Christ and the righteous. As a Shiite Muslim, Ahmadinejad reveres Islam's 12th Imam, Muhammad al-Mahdi, who disappeared from the earth in the 10th century and is said to be due to return accompanied by Jesus to save mankind. The date of his return is not known, but Ahmadinejad indicated that he felt the arrival would come quickly, telling delegates, "Now we can sense the sweet scent and the soulful breeze of the spring, a spring that has just begun." Some critics of Iran's Islamic regime have expressed concern that messianic Shiite beliefs might drive leaders like Ahmadinejad to seek an apocalyptic confrontation with those he sees as foes of God's will on earth. So this was at the UN, United Nations, his speech, 2012, Iranian president. So you see, it starts from their belief of the Mahdi coming and all that. You know, so when you understand the concept of the Mahdi, then you understand the characteristics and you understand the purpose. You would then appreciate the fact that Iran sees Israel and the US, so US as big Satan, Israel as little Satan. This is all inbuilt in their beliefs. So, you know, they see it as a spiritual duty to exterminate Israel from the place. They want total control. The Middle East should be fully for them. And mind you, for those who don't know, the third holiest site in Islam is in Israel. That's Jerusalem. And that's the Al-Aqsa Mosque. So it's all part of, you know, the whole tension that we have in the Palestinian, the East Jerusalem, divide Jerusalem and all that, the Al-Aqsa Mosque and all. So they see it as their right to clear them out of, they see Israel as the occupiers, and then so they should be exterminated from the place and all that. So they don't hide it. It's not new. They don't hide it. Their hatred is not anything strange. So when they chant death to Israel, death to America, this rhetoric is something that is, it's not just a rhetoric, it's a doctrine. It's a doctrine that they believe that they have to act on. You know, so the reason why Iran has been sponsoring the Hamas, the Hezbollah, the Houthi rebels, the Islamic Jihad, and the Iraqi rebels and all the reason, or the main reason, is because of Israel, because they need these proxies to make it easier to attack Israel, to fight Israel in various ways, you know. So all the sponsorship of the global terror because of Israel is for spiritual reasons and spiritual purposes, you know. So they use these proxy wars to wage the war either directly or indirectly. And, you know, for instance, some of the prophecies, the Bible prophecies, which we are yet to see, we talk of Psalm 83, I mean, we talk of Ezekiel 38. These are all prophecies which are yet to come. These wars, so, you know, now, because of this, you see people talking about Gog and Magog war and all these things. I mean, we've not reached there yet, but these are prophecies yet to come. For instance, if you look at the Psalm 83, verse 4, come, let us wipe them out as a nation. You know, this is a prophecy. I mean, let me just read it for the purpose of this discussion. Psalm 83, verse 4, for instance. Yeah. So, Psalm 83, verse 4. Okay. So, a song or psalm of Asaph. Let me just read from verse 1 quickly. Keep not thou silent, O God, hold not thy peace, and be not still, O God. For lo, thy enemies make a tumult, and they that hate thee have lifted up the head. They have taken crafty counsel against thy people, and consulted against thy hidden ones. They have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation. And this is referring to Israel. This is a prophetic psalm. Let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. Iran has been saying this in various, not exactly quoting the psalm verse, but they've been making this phrase, this statement, I mean, exterminate, I mean, it's time to, like, you know, remove them, Israel, cut them off as a nation, take them off the surface. Some of the things they've said, some of their leaders have said in times past, you know, they have to erase them from the map, the world map. I mean, and they don't hide it, they say it. For they have consulted together with one consent. They are confederate against thee. So the tabernacles of Edom, the Ishmaelites of Moab and all that, if you go through, these are all some of the countries in the Gulf and the Middle East zone. So this is a prophetic chapter that is yet to come to pass. So come and let us, you know, remove them, and so that they will not be remembered as a nation. Iran says it, and this alliance of his proxies and all is part of this agenda: remove Israel as a nation. You know, so they have this Islamic regime has an agenda in Iran against, it's a religious regime, religious agenda against Israel. And, you know, so they are ruled by radical Islamic leaders. This is no secret as well. But the fact that they are driven by the jihadist eschatology, and that's what I read earlier. For those who don't know, I was talking about it last year and earlier as well, that there is eschatology also in Islam. So the Shia's eschatological beliefs is what they, so that's one of the things, like the Magdi, the 12 Imam will come with Jesus and come and fight the Antichrist. Ironically, the characteristics, if you study the characteristics of the Magdi, is similar to the characteristics of Antichrist in the Bible. So it's like, it's a bit twisted, but that's it. But so they believe the Magdi will come with Jesus. I mean, as I read earlier, you heard it. I mean, it's one of their beliefs. So this eschatological belief, or their end time belief, is one of the major reasons that fuels their activities. There was this documentary that was done about 10 or so years earlier ago. The title was The Coming is Upon Us. It was in their language, Farsi, but Khalili did a very good interpretation into English, but I don't know whether it's still online. I mean, you can search and see if you find it. I've not searched yet, but I remember reading extracts of it on this program. No, this was 12 years or so ago. Yeah, reading excerpts of it on this program about 12 years ago. You know, where the coming is upon us. Ahmadinejad, when he was president, commissioned this documentary and all that. I mean, you watch it and you read the English translation and all that, and you really see the agenda. That is a pure spiritual agenda. It's like at a point some even nicknamed him, but his behavior was as if like John the Baptist preparing the way for Jesus to come, type of thing. So he was acting like John the Baptist, quote unquote, preparing the way for the Magdi to come. And he didn't shy away from speaking it out, even to the point saying it at the UN. That's what I read, the UN reports, United Nations of all places. He was there. That was his closing part of his speech. You see, so it tells you how strong they believe in this activity. They believe in this doctrine, that they have a role to play. You know, and you know, let me just, for the sake of time, okay, I still have some time, so yeah, I think I can just proceed. So it's one of the things which is the driving force. And so it's just like, you can't have the analogy of such like, okay, so having a neighbor who is hostile building a bomb, and you know that this bomb this your neighbor is doing is preparing is for you, because he has said that he has to wipe you out, clean you out of the world map. And the easiest way to clean a small nation out of a map, for instance, would be to drop a bomb that is widespread. That's one of the easiest ways to clean them out of the map. Because if you, this one, you don't come by ground soldiers and fighting. No. It's more of a bomb issue. That's the easiest way to exterminate them, clear them off the map, wipe them off. You know, so when you see some of the things that Israel does, and you know, people will not understand them. Why are they doing this and all that? I was having a chat with someone this week, and you see, one question I asked, well, do you believe that the Egypt in the Bible, the Syria, Lebanon, Iran, which is Persia, all this, Ethiopia, this country, Greece, no, do you believe that these nations that we see today are the same, or were the same that we had in the Bible, even from the Old Testament onward, upwards, I mean, coming to the New Testament and all, where some of the names are the Greece, I mean, Paul, missionary journey, all the places that Paul was going to, places around Turkey and all, those were all cities and towns that were, I mean, they were there in reality. So the church, for instance, the book of Revelation, the letters that Jesus wrote through to John to the seven churches, the Ephesus, the Thyatira, and all, these are all places that were in Turkey then. So do you believe that all these places, these towns and countries and whatever, in the names in the Bible that existed then, are they the same places now that we have, we see on our world map, we see in the news, CNN, BBC and all, we see, if they mention Egypt, they mention Syria, they mention Lebanon, they mention Jordan, is it the same that's in the Bible? We say yes. Then the question now is, why is it that the same Israel in the Bible, that one, we have a problem that it's not that same Israel that is the Israel we see today, and rather some want to even believe that they are rather occupiers? I mean, it's funny, because Egypt, yes, we believe Egypt is Egypt. We believe Jordan is Jordan. We believe Syria is Syria. These are all neighbors of Egypt, I mean, Israel, if you look at the map. But for the Israel that is there now, they will say, no, it's not the Israel that was in the Bible. I mean, how does it fit? So in one breath, oh yes, all those nations in the Bible are still the same nations now. Okay, fine. But for Israel, no, it's not. So if it's not, what happened to Israel? Why is Israel, the physical Israel that we now see in the news, that Israel, that land, that nation, that country, is not the Israel that was in the Bible? the person is like, because you see, we can let the media run the emotional aspect of this whole thing, and Christians can be confused about it. But the reality is, the whole world, yes, we have all